Carol here. I'm here with Steve Monteghetti. Steve, had a fantastic running career, mate. Everyone, if anyone doesn't know who you are, they've probably been on Venus for the last 20 years. But just wondering what the earliest memory of your running career is.
I do remember my first race out in Ballarat, and I remember enjoying it more than anything. I know I did actually run all right and split a couple of guys from Stawell who were dominating junior athletics in Ballarat at the time. But that was when I was 14 years of age on a cold, wintry day out at Burrumbeat Racecourse, about 15 minutes drive out of Ballarat. So it was a nice way to start my career. Cross country, and started with a cross country race, and it's probably still my favourite of the three running places. I prefer cross country best.
But you started, you started in little athletics, didn't you?
Sort of, yeah. I had a bad experience in little athletics. I was going along and having a go at everything, and after about 6 weeks, my dad came to pick me up, and the person that was taking the little athletics came over and suggested that I wasn't going to be any good, and that it wasn't any bother to, don't bother bringing me back. That was a true story, and luckily I think Little A's has moved on a bit since then. They don't kind of make that early judgment on someone. But I didn't go back, to be honest. That was my short and brief experience with little athletics, and I was probably 8 or 9 at the time, and never went back until, as I say, that my next-door neighbour invited me out to a local Ballarat race when I was in secondary school.
You've had some great performances over the years. Just to name a few, you won in Berlin, your bronze medal in the World Champs in Athens, and great runs in London and Tokyo, and the list just is, it's just an endless list. Out of all your performances, what would you class as your, most cherished memory? And as you go further away from the prime of your career, does your most cherished memory change? I mean, in the past, I've heard you say that you were most proud of your performance in Atlanta, where it was a tough run for you. You were one of the favourites, and you finished further down the field than what you wanted to. And I was just wondering, as you go on in life, do you hang on to different memories, and do they change as time goes by?
It's not that they change. I think you just see them in a different perspective, and each one of the runs, because I had such a long career, there's runs that I consider, are probably my toughest. Then there's other runs that maybe I look at and say, well, I ran well that day, considering where I'd come. I might have been injured leading in, the weather conditions. So you kind of see them in different ways. I always think I try and rank the probably my top three, and I think the 97 World Championships in Athens was bronze medal for me. It was the only world medal that I got, so to me that was a highlight. And it was running from Marathon to Athens, and finishing in the old stadium, so that was tremendous to do it in that environment. And the World Half Marathon, when I won the Great North Run in 1990, a couple of weeks before Berlin, and broke the world record, that was a complete surprise. And for me to actually think, you finish a race and you think, God, I've ran that distance quicker than anyone else ever has, was something I found really difficult to comprehend. So that was a great highlight, and I think that started a bit of a resurgence in the half marathon as well. I've got a world championship now, and so I consider that I had some influence on that. And the third run, and no one will be surprised, Lap of the Lake in Ballarat. There was only, it was a 1992, I don't know, May 1992, no one watching, and I ran one of the races of my life to run 16:10 around there. For a guy who's a marathon runner, 6K or just under 6K, and I ran 16:10. That was a fantastic run, one of my great runs. So, there's sort of a personal one, a world one, and probably a medal at a championship. So it covers or a fast one, a championship one, and a personal one.
So your 16:10 around Lake Wundaree, what does that convert to for 5K? Surely you would have worked it out to the tenth of a second.
Yeah, I have it. It's about 13:33 through 5K. So, as you know, that's not bad going. You have ran faster, but there's not too many other people in Australia that have ever ran faster on the track for 5K than that. So, it was, it was just one of those freakish days, even for me to run that fast. My second fastest time, and everyone will also realise, I've ran millions of laps of Lake Wendouree, and my second fastest time is actually 16:36. From memory, so it was 26 seconds quicker than I'd ever ran before. So even for me, it was just one out of the box. And obviously, I was in great shape. I ran a world record for the half marathon, ran my 10K PB, ran that lap of the lake, and yet I finished 48th at the Olympic Games. So even though it was probably when I was in the best shape of my life at the championship, you know, was the one disappointment at a championship that I had. So in all, you know, you got to take your ups and downs and look at an overall year and say, well, 1992 was probably my best year, and yet publicly people would see it as a disappointment with the Barcelona result.
I know when you're at your peak or at your the guts of your running career, when you would go for a 60-minute run, you would go for a 60-minute run. So if you got back in 59 minutes and 10 seconds, you would, I think there's a story once where you actually, you had a veranda on one of your houses or something, and you ran 50 seconds back and forth along your veranda. I was wondering if it's still the same these days when Steve Monteghetti goes for a 60-minute run. What happens these days if you get back in 59 minutes and 10 seconds?
I am a little bit better now. I just, sometimes, I still do. I mean, occasionally I'll just, if I'm close, you know, if I'm 59, 50, I'll just sort of run slowly up the driveway or something. But, yeah, I was meticulous, and I find it very difficult now because I'm advising and coaching a lot of people, and I still have that approach, and I find it difficult to not pass that on to other people. I can't believe that other people wouldn't want to do it. You know, I ran exactly 200 k's a week and all that. All my weeks would end with at an even number. So it was just the meticulous way that I planned and trained. And I think it was quite significant that I would do that. In a race, it never worried me. I never worried about my place or my time in a race because I reckon I was so meticulous in my training that I covered everything off in training so that once I got to the race, I just was able to race because I know that I'd been so meticulous in the lead-up that it allowed me to relax on race day. So I find that fact that I am so meticulous and conscious of making sure I tick every challenge off and get the time and the mileage right, I really think that made me a more effective racer when it got to race day.
You mentioned their challenge, though. I just wonder whether, I was a little bit the same myself, but I would go, if I was going for a 60-minute run, I would run for 60 minutes because I thought that if you finish at 59 minutes and 10 seconds and stop then, well, that's the easy option. Whereas if you go through to 60 minutes, then that shows that, you know, you're not going to take the easy option. If you say that you're going to go for a 60-minute run, well, that's what you do.
Yeah, that's interesting because I never kind of thought that. To me, it was more, okay, this is a part of the training that I've set myself out. I said I was going to do 60 minutes today. I'd do 60 minutes. So to be honest, to use your analogy, Pat, if I was going for a 59-minute and 10-second run, I would run for 59 minutes and 10 seconds. And I wouldn't have a problem with that. I wouldn't say, oh, gee, that's a weak option. Gee, you know, most people would go for 60, so I better add that 50 seconds on. I would just do what in my mind and on my training program it said to do. So it was a personal challenge for me, not comparing to anyone else, but just to be able to tick off the mileage and the program that I'd set myself that week, month or year. And that's the way I always work. So it wasn't like I was comparing to anyone else. It was just making sure I lived up to the expectations that I'd set myself.
When you ran a number of championship races and obviously international races, and there's always been a lot of talk around about drugs in sport, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I guess us Australians, we've always been removed from that. I know Sean Crichton, yourself, me, Deke or whatever, I mean, none of us have ever been exposed to drugs or even possibly even offered drugs, and I wouldn't even know what they bloody look like. But I was just wondering if in your time, if you ever, you know, placed in a race or finished high up in the field and looked at the guys ahead of you and just wondered, or if maybe they were involved in some sort of EPO drug doping, and if so, if you ever felt that maybe you should speak out about it, or if you're happy just to keep quiet about it and just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it's difficult to speak out because rules are made. You know, it's not my area. WADA and the sports governing body set the rules, and I just live by the rules. But if someone breaks those rules, I think that they should be certainly affected, you know, and banned. And you know, I have no problems. I would ban them for 4 years and second or third fine of that they're on drugs, they should be banned for life. I don't have a problem with that. I'm pretty stringent on that. When the rules are broken, you suffer the consequences. But in my own career, like you say, I never saw any aspect of any drug use within my sport. Now, it's all innuendo. You know, it was more the systematic approach. I always looked at, you know, there was talk of Miguel Indurain's coach who was coaching some athletes from a particular country or two, without mentioning those countries, European countries. So there's always a feeling that those athletes from those particular countries were maybe exposed to it through that. So I never kind of, I know that the athletes are responsible for it, but I always thought it was coming more from the coaching, the federation, or those sorts of organisations. So we talk about stamping it out. You've got to go to the top. It really needs to be looked at from that level. For me personally, never worried about it. If I finish fifth in a race, and I hold this, if I finish fifth and the first four people were found to be on drugs, wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't move up in the results. I'd still finish fifth in that race, because on that particular day, that's where I was. I was fifth, and I don't live my life on results. I run my best possible race, and on that particular day, my best possible race was fifth. I crossed the finish line, so I'm very happy with that. That's my result. My result is what it is. I can't control what other people do, and those four in front of me have to live with the consequences of, at that time, they were cheating. And that's on their conscience and doesn't affect how I see the outcome of the race.
Yeah, I often think that people who are involved in drug doping, that how they're going to look back on their, how they're going to look back on their career when they're old and in their rocking chair, and if they're actually going to sort of, if it's going to be, if the beer's not going to taste quite as nice as what it maybe could have if they were clean. But anyway, let's give those people the benefit of the doubt. But Steve, I've raced a number of races against you. I think a couple of times I've even had dinner. One time I remember the Sydney Half Marathon, we had dinner together the night before, and here we were the next day about to rip around the streets of Sydney. You always seem to be a bit of a cool, calm, collective sort of a character on the eve of a race. Did you ever get nervous before any of your major races?
Funnily enough, I got more nervous the later on in my career I got, and there's no doubt that's one of the reasons I retired. And obviously, everyone's realising now, I'm still in pretty good shape, but it was the expectation. So I was never nervous for myself, to be honest. I was always nervous about how the public would perceive my run. As I say, I've had races where I've finished 7th, 8th in races, and I've been happy with it. But publicly, the people say, well, what happened? And I found that a little bit difficult, because obviously in the later stages of my career, I was seen to be carrying the distance running, Australian distance running, almost on my shoulders, certainly in the marathon event. So I found that expectation was getting very difficult for me to live up to, and I would worry how the public would perceive my result, even though I knew I'd run to the best of my ability and my result would take care of itself. It was always difficult for me to then face the public or the media, and they say, well, what happened? I'd say, well, geez, I ran hard. I can't do any more than that. And so I always felt like I was living up to expectation near the end of my career. And that probably was more nerve-wracking. And it's interesting, because I reckon it fits the plan of how I've operated, because I think what is nerve-wracking is when something's out of your control. And I've never been nervous leading into a race, because I know I've done all the training. I've been meticulous, as we've already spoken about. So when I get to the race, I know my race result's going to be fine, because I've always got there in great shape. And there's no doubt, if you look at my career, I've been impeccably consistent because I've ticked off all of those things in training. So by race day, the result's going to look after itself. So no need to be nervous, because you know that I've done all the work. And I think it was more the public expectation that made me nervous rather than my own expectations.
Probably a number of people listening to this, weekend warriors, I love to call them, and I don't use that in a derogatory term, but a lot of people out there who make up the numbers, such as the 50,000 odd and the Sea to Surf, a lot of those people do actually get nervous before their event. And I'm just wondering if there is any advice you can give to those people, any sort of skills they can employ in the last 48, 24 hours before an event, that they may be able to, skills they can employ to reassure themselves that everything's cool, no need to get worked up.
I always think, make sure you look after the things as early as you can that you can. Like, I always have my clothes set out the night before. I pin my numbers on. I have my bag almost sealed. I close it up, different times. So I do all the things leading into a race. There's a number of things that I like to call variables. Now, obviously, your training leading in is a variable, but I tick that off. Then all these other variables, if you can plan them and put them away, then do that, so that on the morning or day of a race, you give yourself the best opportunity to just focus on the race itself. Okay, and then the other thing that does is it's also reassuring, because you've done everything you can control you have, and everything you can't, why worry about it? Because you can't control it anyway. So I like on race day to be in a position where I just get, you know, my singlet all's laid out in the bag, ready to go. I just go down to the line, and it's all fits into place. Nothing unexpected, no panicking required. All of that's done just to allow you to keep it fairly simple. Running, it's pretty straightforward, nothing hard about it. The fire the gun, you put one foot in front of the other, cross the finish line, end of story. You pace yourself through it, and hopefully you get there in a time that you expect. So I always think, you know, hey, we can get complicated about all these other issues, just getting your drinks, you know, wearing the right equipment, how different it's going to be in crowds, you know, what time you go through this, what part of the course, you know, who's going to be there at the finish, all your plan. Don't worry about all that. The basic line is you just need to focus on starting the race, running a good planned race, and crossing the finish line. So I think people get a bit carried away with all this extra stuff. Now, running, we know, mate, it was pretty simple. Back in our days, it wasn't that hard. So don't worry about all of that other crap. It's supplementary stuff, you know. You can get carried away with all of that and lose focus that it's just a pretty simple race. You've done the training, and just, you know, do the things you can do and let the other things take care of themselves.
Mate, I've teamed with you on a number of occasions, and one of the trips I used to really enjoy with up to Chiba there for the Chiba Ekaden Relay, which was, they were great times. And mate, a number of occasions I got my kid off with you running through those through the paddy fields, and just wondering if you missed the good old days of with Sean and yourself and me and a few other guys, you know, running naked through the paddy fields, and if you think there should be more of it, mate.
I must say, when I was coming down in the lift, knowing I was doing this interview, I thought, mate, we had some great times. There is no doubt. I don't know what they're doing nowadays, but they're not the same breed of athletes. And you know, we did what we had to do, but we had a bit of fun around it. And it wasn't a life, you know. We weren't planning our lives. It was a job, I suppose, for me. But I never saw it like that. We went away on teams, and we had some fantastic times. We did some crazy things, and you know, for blokes who were pretty conservative, we ended up having a bit of fun. It was all harmless, good fun, and we made friendships that you know, stood the test of time, and you know, situations like this, you look back and think, geez, you know, we did have some great days. And you talk about the loneliness of a long distance runner, it has been a fantastic sport where I've made a lot of great friends that I'll keep for life. And you know, I'm not quite sure if the sports people in this day and age quite have that same ethic or same belief that, you know, they're allowed to have a bit of fun and that it's not all that serious, and it's just a delight to be able to go away with it on a team representing your country and get looked after and you know, run well but have a bit of fun along the way. So yeah, I don't know if times have changed. Maybe I'm getting a bit sentimental in my old age, but I'm sure that those days were great days.
When you push yourself in training now, obviously you're still rip around the lap of Lake Windaree millions of times a year, still with your heart going pumping out of your chest. How does it compare to when you're at your prime? Obviously, you know, there's some times when you're at the you have your youth and you can't run enough, and you'll come out and you'll run your world records for half marathon and win your races at Berlin. And sometimes the races, they almost come a little bit easy because you're at the peak of your career and you're training really hard. But here you are now, and you're close on 43 years of age next month. So how does it compare now? Because you must go in races now. Obviously, you're still going fantastic, but you're not winning. So one would think that if you're not winning, then obviously you're running your guts out to come second or third. So you're not taking it easy. So how does it compare when you're going something like the Sydney Half Marathon this year, Sydney Morning Herald Half Marathon this year, when you came third? How you felt in the race compared to, say, when you won the event?
It's certainly a lot harder. I know that. Like you say, I think when you're running well, you just float across the ground and it all seems easy. I definitely have to work a lot harder for it now. The thing I'm finding is my training's nowhere near the level that it was, and yet I think just my background allows me to get to a race. And, you know, I only run probably sort of 6 or 7 serious races for the year, and I tend to still be able to get up for those races just because of that experience, that background in training. So I think in training I just sort of tick it off and need races like this to keep me motivated and fired up. And even though I know I'm not going to win, I'm actually running better in the races than my training is indicating, which for me is, you know, a pretty satisfying thing. And it's just a personal thing of, hey, I've still got it, you know, and every now and then I just get a sniff of it and say, geez, you know, when I really needed to pull that out, I can get a good run out still. And that gives me a bit of personal pride, and, you know, it starts to make me realise how great all those times were when I was winning races, because the similar feeling when you have a good run, doesn't matter where you finish, you know a good run is a good run. And in training now, I struggle to get that real endorphin release, that runner's high. Whereas I can tell you, the Sydney Morning Herald Half Marathon, I came flying home. I was if it had gone another K, I would have got Scotty Westcott and would have finished second. And I was on a real high after that, because I'm thinking, shit, how good's this? You know, I'm 43 and these blokes are still having trouble getting rid of me. So that's the way I'm getting my sort of runners high now, by still racing and not training at as high a level, just enjoying training with the guys in Ballarat, but needing races like this just to still keep that challenge and interest and feeling of euphoria in the sport for me.
I mean, I have a couple of theories, actually, apart from that, as to why you're still involved in the sport. You are absolutely meticulous, I think, as you touched on before, with regards to your athletic career. There's nothing that would have taken Steve Monteghetti away from the plan that yourself and Chris Wardlaw had laid down. I remember a story once, correct me if this is wrong, but back in the days when they had the Jakarta 10K, and this was when you were sort of not established very much as a marathon runner. You may have run okay, but not fantastic, and apparently they offered you a swag of dough to go to Jakarta, to the 10K, but you said, no, I'm not going, because that's my Sunday long run. And that's how committed you were, and I guess it's things like that which enabled you to be such a fantastic athlete. And I just wonder if now you're making up for lost time, making up for the times when you've said, no, I'm not going to go there, because I'm going to do my Sunday long run, I'm going to do everything properly, because I've got the World Championships coming up, I've got the Olympics, I've got to get my consistent number of Sunday long runs in, regardless of how many thousands of dollars you're going to offer me, you can go and get stuff, because I've got my training to do. And I was just wondering if there's a little bit of in you now that you're traveling around, you're going into races left, right and center. I was wondering if and you know, obviously because you love the sport, but also because, you know, you're taking advantage of events you couldn't have done in the past.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that's the case. And I think someone's calling me the Fun Run King. I'm everywhere. I'm taking over from people I used to have not a great deal of respect for, to be perfectly honest. But, I suppose it gives me a chance also. We're travelling with the family. We get to see a lot of different races. And you know what I find really great? And this it's like I'm on a sort of testimonial tour. I go to places and people come up to me. And, you know, I was in Townsville last week, and people come up to me and they go, mate, I followed your career and you've just been a delight to watch. I love watching you. And to actually have that personal contact with people, you know, when you're running for Australia, you assume there's thousands of people out there actually following your career. But to actually then see them down the track and get that reinforced is it's fantastic to think, oh, you know, geez, I appreciate that. So it's a nice pat on the back for and contact with people that have been out there for when I was in the twilight of main part of my career. And it's lovely now to be able to sort of have that reinforced personally by travelling around to see those different people around the country. So that's been a real bonus. I didn't do it for that reason, but that's been an unexpected bonus in going to the number of events that I have. And you know, again, I'm putting a little bit back to the sport. I try and get out and see some younger kids and take time to encourage school kids and that wherever I go. So it's also an opportunity for me to pass a little bit back to what's been a fantastic sport to me.
Yeah, I've often heard that statement, putting back into the sport, but I often think that you've given a hell of a lot. I mean, people say, oh, when people retire, they have to give back to the sport, but I don't know whether I look at it from a wrong perspective. But I like to think someone like yourself, you've provided a great deal of entertainment to a whole lot of people, and I'm just wondering, you know, why do you feel like you owe anything to the sport? If anything, the people of Australia owe you, because you've entertained them all these years and run your bloody heart out, mate.
Yeah, I think talking about the next generation, it you know, there were people when I was younger who, you know, like that first day I went out to Ballarat, and they welcomed me, they encouraged me, and you know, they came around and knocked on my door and wanted me to run for different clubs. People picked me up in cars, took me to different races, and just for me to, I think I think they established pretty good morals. You know, obviously my family did, but I think your environment also builds your morals as a youngster. And for me, and people say to me now, hey, you know, you're a good bloke. Well, I've turned out pretty well because of the contact that I've had with people through my involvement in sport. And I think we have a really important role to play with people we come into contact with. And this being a known person, travelling around, gives me an added advantage in contacting people and making sure that, you know, hey, I might make a difference as a role model to the people I come in contact with, not just young, old, anyone I come into contact with. So it's I'm using my name as a well-known marathon runner as a vehicle to just pass on that moral experiences to hopefully make people get a bit more out of their lives and be better people.
I mean, you are a fantastic role model for the sport, and I'm just—I mean, I feel extremely proud of the sport of distance running because, realistically, when you look at it, there is no sport which comes close to the ability to assemble so many people at the one time. I mean, you have triathlon, and I don't know—I think Noosa Triathlon might be the biggest triathlon in the world, and they get about 2,000 or 3,000 up there. You get something like the Gold Coast Marathon, 10,000 odd people all there, but the Sea to Surf, over 50,000. I mean, we do belong to a fantastic sport, and you must feel extremely proud to be the, I guess, the most high-profile ambassador for the sport in Australia.
Yeah, I don't think of it like that. Actually, I suppose it's one of those sports that you can do, you know, and people see me, and even in Ballarat, it's not like people stop me in the street and say, wow, there's Steve Monteghetti. You know, you're just a normal person who's doing something like everyone else. We just get there a bit quicker. So it's a pretty good sport like that you can actually participate in it at all levels. And like you say, you know, on Sunday morning, 55,000 people are going to make their way from city Sydney down to Bondi Beach, and you know, you don't care who cares who wins or loses, to be honest. It's just a fantastic effort for such a it's combining, it's like uniting. Imagine if there was some cause, you know, you think about Band-Aid and Live Aid and those sorts of things. Well, we're in a way, we're doing a similar. We're getting a group of 55,000 people together saying, hey, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to get over this sucker, we're going to do it as a team, we're all going to do this great challenge. And gee, it's a pretty spectacular and inviting thing to be able to be a part of something as big as that. So, you know, I see myself as an ambassador, but I think we're part of one united front, and I don't see myself as being any different to anyone else. I'm just getting out there doing what I enjoy doing. And you've got to admire the people who put on this race. Imagine the logistics of putting the race on that gives us the opportunity to just participate in such a race. So I think, well, it's nice to just come along and be a part of all of that.
Yeah, well, I guess something such as the Sea to Surf is such a fantastic concept also because it's a generation thing. There's lots of fathers who run the event when they're children, and then they become adults and then their children run it with them. So I think, you know, the sport of distance running, even though it may not be get the exposure in the media as what football and cricket does, when it comes to such the ability of a sport to cater for so many people at the one time, then I believe that distance running is heads and shoulders above any other sport that in the world, really.
I think interestingly, you know, most of we all say Australians love their sport. We love it as spectators, to be honest. Not too many of us participate when you think about all our high profile sports, and yet, you know, we're in one that you get to participate, and we, you know, everyone asks who wins at the end, but they don't really care about the win or the loss. It's the participation that's really important. And you know, we can all come up with the catchphrases and all the, you know, the things like, oh, you know, gee, it's a great event, oh, the satisfaction of finishing and all that, but and who, you know, who won and all that, but really it's just a great event to participate in. So you really are just participating and not worrying about the end result. If you wanted to run your fastest 14K run, you wouldn't run the Sea to Surf because you're around people, there's crowds all the way, it's hilly, and yet all of these people show their support by running in the event. So the event is bigger than a personal result, and I think that's quite significant that, you know, these mass participation events are so popular, because it gives a chance for people to be in an environment where they're participating rather than just watching as a spectator, and you get a lot more out of it by involving yourself in things like this.
So just talking about the race on Sunday, we're sitting here on the eve of the 2 days before the 2005 City to Surf, and by the time everyone listens to this, the race would have been run and won, but you're up against two of your sparring partners from last year in Patrick Nyangelo and Dixon Marwa, and they're both looking like they're in pretty good shape. Does it frustrate you, let's say, if it's the same scenario as last year and it's down to the three of you? Does it frustrate you that slightly that you're not as youthful and as good looking as you used to be, mate, and that their combined age is equal to yours, mate?
I tell you, if the scenario pans out, I'll be happy to finish third. Let me tell you that. If I cross the line, if you're hearing this and I've finished third in the City to Surf, I'll be very happy with that, because seriously, at this stage of my career, that's an unreal expectation. So I was really tickled pink the way I ran last year. The only thing that does disappoint me is that I don't like, being patronised, and I reckon they patronised me a bit last year. So I think Patrick could have smashed me up more than he did, but because he wanted to get Dixon up so they could Quinella the race, I think they hung around a bit longer than what they could have. So that annoyed me. And what I would really love is seriously for me to finish, 6th or 7th, and for an Australian to get in the mix and be able to stick it to them. Because seriously, as you know, you and me, mate, we would stick it to them. But we can't, because we're older. So the next generation has got to be able to lay it on the line. Firstly, they've got to forget about me. It's just, if I beat them, well, that's fine. I've ran well. But they shouldn't be thinking, God, I can't beat Steve Monaghan. He's, who he is. They just got to get that out of their mind. They're racing two Tanzanians. That's all they're racing this weekend. They should just have that on their mind. Forget about me. Remove me from the equation and get on to racing to do the best they can to at least split those Tanzanians. Now, that is a good race plan. And I hope you're listening to this and saying, well, geez, his words were prophetic, because we found a new Australian who was prepared to lay it on the line, stick it to those blokes, and that did happen. So, that's hopefully what will happen.
And speaking of the current crop of Australian distance running, I think Troopy's the only one who's inclined to get his kit off. But apart from that, mate, what do you think about the who's around at the moment? I mean, obviously Craig Mottram is Superman in the making. The guy's unbelievable. Benita Johnson, world champion, world cross country. You can't do much better than that. But what do you think about the current crop, and I guess the state of Australian distance running as a whole?
I'm slightly concerned. There's actually good runners out there. They've just not taken the next step. And they, right here, right now, I'm telling you, half of them are in Europe chasing some European domestic seas, track over there, trying to get a qualifying early for Commonwealth Games. Half of them have got Buckley's chance. They go over there thinking it's a Tats Lotto ticket. Someone's just going to hand them a qualifying time. So that annoys me. They need to establish themselves at a much higher level here. I mean, half those guys going overseas can't even beat me. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They think they're going to run a qualifying time and they can't even dominate the domestic scene here in Australia. So that annoys me that they don't pay their dues. They don't respect that, hey, there's a lot happening here in Australia. We've got a good running fraternity here that they can just get into that, really do some hard work, do some great racing here. Benita and Craig, they're at a different level. Fantastic. They've served their apprentices, apprenticeships. They've been here. They've done the hard stuff here, and now they're at another level. They deserve to be on the European circuit. They're not chasing qualifying times. They're chasing world medals, and that's a different scenario, whereas there's so many people now who I think, look at an easy option. They try and get some fantastic training method. They swap coaches all the time. In our day, mate, was simple. We the same coach. It wasn't any, we all had different coaches. There's about five coaches in Australia, but they all had the same idea. Just get out there and train hard. That's the bottom line. It's a simple philosophy that people have started to now think, if we do this and go to Europe, we'll see these guys training. Oh, the Americans going well. Why don't we go over there? And they chop and change so much that I think we've just lost sight a little bit of just doing some damn hard work, getting to a certain level so that then you can travel internationally, deservedly so, and just put the icing on the cake and, you know, refine little methods of training then that just cap off that extra couple of percent to get you to the next level on at an international stage. But, you know, there's a few guys who just need, guys and girls who probably need to have a bit of a hard look at how they're going between now and Commonwealth Games, because, you know, we need to get a few more guys qualified and deserving of a Commonwealth Game team membership.
Mate, just in closing, I remember one story back in one time we were going away, and I believe you almost missed the plane, and you got to the plane itself at the bay, and that actually had closed the door. And I don't know if the guy was on the two-way or actually was trying to yell through the tell me if this is wrong, but trying to yell through the plane. I don't know if you can hear through the plane, but he might be on a two-way. Let's say he was on a two-way, but he said, "Oh, mate, we got one more passenger here." And the guy on the other side of the door said, "No, too late. We're taking off." And the guy said, "Mate, it's mono bloody Getty. Open the door." Anyway, they opened the door and they let you in. And Ryan Fallon used a story earlier on today at the press thing, where at the Olympic Games in 2000 you walked up into the stands as a spectator, and maybe this was after your event, I don't know if it was after or before, was it after? Before your event, and when you're walking up the stairs into the stands, everyone stood up and gave you a big cheer, mate. But maybe that was because you were walking up with Johnny Howard at the time, was it? anyway, but I'm just wondering, what's it like being Steve Monteghetti? What's it like sort of sitting back in your quiet moment when you're by yourself and maybe you've had one or two glasses of red and you think, look back and you reflect on what you've achieved? Or maybe in that few moments before you nod off at night time, do you get a lot of solace in what you've achieved? And is it? Do you feel proud to be Steve Monteghetti and what you've done, mate?
It's interesting you talk about those two stories, because I reckon they're a reflection on the fact that Australians respect people who they know of, you know, having a go. And those two examples, you know, the person on the plane didn't need to let me on, but they thought, geez, that bloke's done something pretty hard. He's worked hard, and it's a nice way of repaying the work he's put in by letting him on the flight. And the same, you know, you don't expect people to acknowledge you in a, you know, something like the Sydney Olympics, but the fact that I was in, you know, in a situation that and they said, gee, here's a guy who, you know, we're proud of what he's done for our country, so we'll show him a bit of respect by giving him a standing ovation, and which they did do. I was completely stunned, but and so I think that's a reflection on how good Australians are, and they understand, you know, people put in a bit of hard work, they respect that, and I appreciate that, and I've found that wherever I go. Country Australians are as good as any people in the world. We say Australia's the best country to live in. I reckon Australia's the best country to live in because of country Australians. I've travelled around many places, and I reckon people from regional Australia are as good as anywhere in the world, so that's a compliment to those people. And I'm one of them. I'm a country boy as well. I do sleep pretty well at night, because seriously, you know, I've been very fortunate to have discovered an ability to run. You know, a lot of us have got talents and in different ways, and I've been able to discover one that I've got complete enjoyment out of. It's made me a public face. People recognise me. I've got a lot of, you know, great support out of that. And, you know, I rest and think, gee, I've had a very fortunate life. I've worked very hard. I've done the best I can in that pursuit, and you know, you sleep pretty well at night with that on your mind. And you know, I've got a fantastic family, great support network, a lot of great friends that have you know, just that I've made through working hard and following a goal through over a number of years. And and I suppose you know if you can do that in your life and get to the end of it and think, gee, if you ran your marathon, you've crossed the finish line, you're on your deathbed, and you say, I've crossed the finish line, and gee, by hell, I did the best I possibly could in that race today, the race of life, then you sleep pretty well, or you die pretty well. So it's a pretty good way to finish. I appreciate it, Pat. Thanks. I've enjoyed your company along the way. You're one of my great friends, and it's been a delight to travel with you, race with you. When we race hard. One of the greatest races I've ever seen was you a minute down the road in a half marathon right here in Sydney. So it's been a delight to spend some time with you today. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for your time, mate. You're a fantastic ambassador for the sport, and I'm not going to ask you how many more years you're going to keep running for, because I'll just leave it up to yourself, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm sure you'll always be involved in the sport, and I think it's fantastic the way that you're, even though you're retired from international running, I think it's fantastic that you're still in there having a go and running because you enjoy it. So thanks, mate.